It's break time with Christopher J. Today we're going to take another look at Weird Al Yankovic. Let's time trip back to the 80s and start our story. Buckle up. Now, when we last talked about Al Yankovic, he was just out of college and was working in a mailroom and had some exposure on the Dr. Demento radio show. When he was in college, he worked for the campus radio station, KCPR, as a disc jockey. And it would be at that radio station where he took on the moniker of Weird Al. Why Weird Al? Well, he was probably younger than some of the other college kids, and some of the kids in his dormitory stuck him with that nickname in a derogatory way. So what did Al do? Well, he took it. He owned it. He took the power of that slur away from the people that would criticize him or didn't understand him or whatever the case is. And he took it and he made that his own. He made it part of him. He became Weird Al when he was on the radio. Now, in 1978, Al would release his first recording. He did it under the name Al Yankovic, and it was the song Take Me Down on the LP Slow Grown. It was a benefit for the Economic Opportunity Commission at San Luis Obispo County. The song itself was very much a local song. It mocked landmarks that were around there like Bubblegum Alley and the waterfall toilets at Madonna Inn. Most people know at least about the Madonna Inn. It's a quirky little hotel motel type place, and they have rooms that are themed about around different things, like they have a caveman room and stuff like that, with, you know, like animal skins on the floor and things like that. Now, in mid-1979, while he was a senior in college, the song My Sharona by the Knack was on the charts, and Yankovic took his accordion into the bathroom across the hall from the radio station to take advantage of the acoustics in there, and he recorded the parody My Bologna. That was a recording he'd send to Dr. Demento, and it got good response from the listeners. Now, here's the funny thing about that. So, the Knack actually came to his college. They played, and after the fact, Al took the opportunity to say that he was the author of My Bologna. The lead singer of the Knack, Doug Feiger, he liked the song, and he suggested that Capitol Records Vice President Rupert Perry release it as a single. And so it was. And on the flip side of that was a song called School Cafeteria. And with that, Al Yankovic found that he had a 6-month recording contract. Now, at the time in school, Yankovic was only getting average grades towards his architecture degree. And he thought maybe he could actually make a career in comedy music. Now, the odds of that were pretty staggering, because at this point in the late 70s and early 80s, people really weren't doing that. People liked funny songs, but there weren't really a lot of that going around. The 40s, 50s had been full of like Ruth Wallace doing her shtick and double entendres and Spike Jones doing his manic thing. But this was the 70s and the 80s, and humor was more sophisticated. So what Al was trying to do was almost unheard of, and the odds were definitely against him. Now, in September of 1980, Al became a guest on the Dr. Demento show, and he recorded a new parody, and he did it live. The song was called Another One Rides the Bus, which is, of course, is a parody of the Queen song Another One Bites the Dust. Now, while he was practicing the song outside the sound booth, he met a guy named John Schwartz. They called him Bermuda as a nickname. Al told him that he needed a drummer, and Schwartz just happened to be a drummer. So they recorded the song together. Schwartz basically banged out the beat on Al's accordion case, and Al, of course, took lead vocals and lead squeeze box. They rehearsed the song just a couple times, and then the show began, and they did the song, and it was recorded, and it was so popular that Al's first television appearance was on the Tomorrow Show with Tom Snyder, and they did that song. So Al thought that his life was rolling forward. He had a single, he's getting TV exposure, things were going great. And then TK Records, the label he was on, went bankrupt. And that was that. And honestly, Al, he didn't even receive any royalties from the initial release of that song. That's how little it was out there, because this record company just had no budget to be able to support him. Now, the 80s had begun proper here, and Al was getting some attention. He joined with a guy named Jay Levy, who is just blown away by Al's act and his creative talent. Levy would help Al put together an actual band and manage him. And through the 80s, he was there to promote every album, every appearance. And they were both co-producers at the end of the decade on the masterpiece that is UHF. And if you think I'm being facetious, I am not. That is a great comedy movie. It's underrated. Cherry Bomb should cover it. I don't know if they even like Weird Al. I should cover it because I love that movie so hard. So Al's shtick was to take popular songs, to make the music as close to possible as the original, and to, of course, write new lyrics and have a new focus for it. So I Love Rock and Roll became I Love Rocky Road. The song Mickey from Tony Basil became Ricky about I Love Lucy. And of course, in 1984, the song Eat It would hit the charts, a parody of Michael Jackson's Beat It. Beat It was probably still on the charts somewhere. It had been on the Thriller album in 1982, and that song was incredibly strong. That album was strong, best-selling album of all time. And when Weird Al covered Eat It, he put it on his third album, Weird Al in 3D, in 1984. And it's what got me interested in Weird Al. It's what showed people that after three albums, like, he was still there. Now, around the same time, a young channel that had been around for a couple of years called MTV, they talked with Al and they wanted him to do something called Al TV. Some specials here. It would give him exposure on MTV. They'd play his videos. It would all be good. A lot of that had to do with the fact that there was a finite amount of music videos and MTV had a finite amount of original programming. But they basically let Al loose to do whatever he wanted to do during this time. And, of course, he weirded it up as much as humanly possible. Now, this would be a move that would expose him to kids that were my age. I would have been 8 at the time. Older kids, it would have been teenagers. Other than my own age group, I don't know what anybody really thinks about Weird Al. I've loved him since I can practically remember. So I'm not the most unbiased person to ask about this. So you had this young kid in his early 20s that was getting radio play. He's on MTV. He's considered to be one of the outcast but cool kids and was creating music and spoofs. He also became known for his original songs in there as well. Sometimes he had not parodies of songs, but songs that channeled a certain sound or what have you. He managed to get the song This Is the Life onto the Johnny Dangerously soundtrack. The one problem with that is that Johnny Dangerously, not a huge hit, although it should have been. I'm going to maintain that's as damn good as UHF is. So if you haven't seen it, go see it. Michael Keaton, it's funny. Mary Lou Henner, Danny DeVito's in it. It's a good movie. It just got missed somehow because, you know, 1983 had other things going on. So after Weird Al made the album in 3D, he would make a couple more in there. He had a lot of pressure on him from the record company. He did the album Even Worse, which I think came out really, really good. It parodied Michael Jackson again with the song Fat, a parody of Bad. And I do think that that whole album is pretty decent. He did one after that that a lot of people kind of consider to be like lesser work or whatever. But you know what? It's Weird Al. Even if he was pressured to put stuff out that he didn't like, I'm sure that just like with any kind of art, that there are fans out there that took it and made it their own, maybe because it wasn't as popular as some of his other stuff had been. I'm of that camp. All of his albums, I can listen to anything on there, and I'm not going to tell you that I hate anything on any of them because I just like Weird Al, and I like his style. So in the mid-80s, Weird Al had what some would call a few missteps. In 1986, he released the album Polka Party. It's one of the ones that his record company kind of rushed him into production on, and he just kind of put out whatever. It's kind of like what he said about it, so it's not just my opinion. He did rebound in 1988 with Even Worse. He was putting out an album like once every 2 years because that's what the record company wanted. And a year after Even Worse, which, again, was a good hit, it had plenty of well-known songs on it. It had Fat. It had a personal favorite of mine called Melanie, which is really messed up, as well as Good Old Days. But in 1989, he had the chance to bring his parody style to the movies. And to me, that was the best medium. He, I'm sure, grew up on cartoons and sketch shows and stuff like that. So he knew what he wanted to do. And he made this movie that was a spoof of pop culture. It had his music in it, had original stuff there. He put out that soundtrack. It didn't exactly go through the roof. It didn't set anything on fire. And this is the official point where we can say that Weird Al's career was in a slump. And I don't blame him for that. Releasing a movie in the summer of 1989, that was a pretty tough thing to do. That was the summer of Batman and Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and Dead Poets Society and Star Trek V of all things and Ghostbusters 2, if I didn't say that one already. It was a tough summer to put something out because there was something coming out like literally every week. If there wasn't one hit, then there was two, and there wasn't a week that went by that there wasn't something that you wanted to go and see. It was the most compelling summer, I believe, of the 80s. So he released his small movie, parody movie, musical comedy movie with Victoria Jackson and Kevin McCarthy, and was directed by his manager, Jay Levy, and it tanked. But it's a cult classic. It's worth it. Go check it out. Now, when we come back to wrap all this up, I'll tell you how he made a rebound and where he went from there. Well, that's it for now. Join us next time when we explore more 80s and 90s pop culture. If you've got any memories of this or other things from the best decades, email me at satmornpod@hotmail.com. And if you're a fan of the 80s or cartoons from the 80s, be sure to check out the Saturday Morning Podcast hosted by me. We drop a new episode every other Saturday and hope it'll make you feel like a kid again. And now, back to our regularly scheduled program.